I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro, popping in to say we've edited this podcast a little for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. Affordability, healthcare costs and access, climate change and disaster preparedness. These are just some of the hallmark issues that Vermont legislators will address in this legislative session, which kicks off today. 180 legislators from across the state are here in the Montpelier State House for the start of the new biennium, that is the two-year legislative session. Vermont Edition is broadcasting live today from the Cedar Creek Room under the Golden Dome. I am seeing more suits and ties than I ever do in Vermont, including the green jackets of the student pages who have traded their school hallways for the halls of the State House today. Over the next hour, we'll be talking to legislators old and new. There are dozens of first-time lawmakers here this session. And already this morning, we've got some news. The House voted 111 to 35 for Representative Jill Krawinski to again serve as the chamber's leader over her challenger, Independent Lauren Sebelia. We'll get reactions from some House leaders on that news in just a few moments. Now, we're not taking calls today, but you can still email us about what your main concerns are this legislative session or the issues that you'd like lawmakers to address on our show today. Our email is vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Our first guest this hour is Senator Phil Baruth. He represents the Chittenden Central District, and just this morning he was reelected as the Senate President pro tem. Senator Baruth, welcome.
Thank you, Michaela. Good to be here.
Good to see you again. How is it feeling so far? I feel a lot of energy here today.
Absolutely. It's a very packed State House this morning, and things are moving quickly. We had elections in both chambers, and now we're ready to get down to business.
All right. What's the business? What is your number one priority this legislative session?
I said this in my remarks after the election, but my number one priority in the chambers, as far as I'm concerned, is education finance reform / property tax spikes. How do we deal with those? How do we, for the coming year, how do we shield people from rises in the property tax while we fix the system? And then how do we fix that system? It's as I said on the floor, it's become far too complex to understand and too unreliable to trust.
Mm. What was happening between the end of last session and today to start to try to untangle that problem?
Right. So last year, we were at work on this problem. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, it can't be done in 1 year. You're talking about the possibility of vast unintended consequences if you move too quickly in the wrong direction. So last year, we empaneled a commission on public education to look into these issues. At the same time, the governor had Zoe Saunders, his secretary of education, moving around the state, listening to people, gathering information, putting together some initial takes on things. So at my nominating caucus a month and a half ago, I invited the governor to use Senate committee's finance, appropriations, and education for a full week to lay out his vision for how we might solve this. And to my delight, he's been receptive to that, and he has put out, in effect, a month's agenda for discussion with quite a bit of specifics. We'll get more when he gives his budget speech. But I think we've already got a tripartisan conversation underway. The goal is to convert that into votes that produce a working framework to change.
Hmm. Now, voters elected 6 Republicans to the Senate this year, eliminating the Democratic supermajority for the session. Senator Randy Brock, who challenged you for your pro tem position, said that Democrats were not very inclusive last year in their committee assignments and the ways in which they incorporated the Republican Party's ideas into your work here in the legislature. Now, you serve on the 3-person committee, the Committee on Committees, that determines these committee assignments. Now that Republicans have picked up these seats in the Senate, will their representation on key committees be different this year?
Absolutely. So those committee assignments, all things being equal, will be announced tomorrow afternoon. And at that point, people will see that we've been quite generous with our Republican colleagues. So, for instance, the two money committees, Appropriations and Finance, will have three Republicans each, as opposed to one, as it was last year. So that's a major change in terms of input into how the state gathers money and spends money. So that's as many seats as you can have without having the majority. Similarly, every single committee in the building will have at least two Republicans. So if it's a five-member committee, it'll have two. We do have one committee in the afternoon that will be a six-member committee. That's education. And there will be three Republicans on that committee, evenly divided. So, you know, my ask to people would be, wait until those seats are revealed, take a look, and I think you'll see we've been more than fair.
Now, Democrats still hold a majority, but the results of the 2024 elections were significant, and not just here in Vermont, but across the country. And we're also going to see President-elect Donald Trump inaugurated in just a couple weeks. As the leader of the Senate, what are your main takeaways from those election results?
Well, let me speak to the property tax, because I think that was the main driver, not the only driver, but the main driver. There was also a red wave nationally. So Donald Trump did significantly better here than he has ever done. And I think that was part of that general shift to the right.
And let me just remind listeners that we're in the Cedar Creek room in the State House in Montpelier. So if you hear a baby crying behind us, that's because legislators get to bring family members here for this first day of the session.
And in fact, we have a senator who had two babies with her on the floor
today.
That's amazing. Yeah, which is a sea change from when I came in. But what I would say is that property tax spike, people don't necessarily understand that local communities produce their budgets, they're all added together, and then we get the bill. When we get the bill, we never raise that tax rate. The only thing we ever do with it is lower it. So last year, it was projected to come in at 18 or 19%. We lowered it to 13.8. That took nearly $100 million to accomplish that. So I tried on the campaign trail to explain to people the legislature actually reduced what would have been your property tax bill. Nobody believed me because the system is so complex and they've heard such competing things for years. To me, that's an indication that the average person can understand the system. It's hopelessly complicated, and it's not shielding us from those spikes in the first place. That's why it's the number one priority.
Because is there a problem with the system being incredibly complicated? I mean,
yes.
Why? Like, well, how, if we make a simpler system, is that necessarily going to fix it?
Well, no, but I think there's a public good in being able to understand how your government works and how your money is spent. So you can go to your local public meeting, your town hall, and vote on your budget in many Vermont communities. That's the ideal that I wish we had. Now, obviously, education finance, especially if you're waiting for certain groups, for instance, it's much more expensive to educate a five-year-old than it is to educate an 18-year-old. And it's more expensive to educate an 18-year-old than a 12-year-old. So you weight the populations in the schools, and so depending on who they've got, for instance, I represent Burlington and Winooski. A lot of English language learners there. It's very expensive to teach them English, but also to have translators and the infrastructure you need to make people competent in our system. So that being the case, we get a little bit more in those districts for those ELL learners. That's as it should be, but once you get that complexity, and then you throw in the common level of appraisal and tax rates and local tax rates, what the legislature does, I think the average person loses faith, and that drives the votes like we saw this past November.
Senator, you mentioned that another senator having, you know, two young children with her today, it feels very different than what it was like when you first started serving as a legislator. First, when was that? How long have you been in the
legislature? I was elected in 2010, so this is my 15th year, and kind of I never thought I would be here for even a fraction of that. I thought I might come in for 5 years, but it has a way of taking hold of you and not letting go. the differences between then and now are profound. So over the last 2 years, we've turned over two-thirds of the Senate. People talked for years about, well, there's going to be a generational turnover. It never seemed to happen until about 4 years ago. And then because many people hit retirement, we had two people die, unfortunately, last biennium, Senator Sears and Senator Mazza. May they rest in peace. They were amazing public servants. But it was part of this big turnover. Now add the change we've turned over by party. So we have six new Republicans coming in. It's a lot of change, I think, in many ways for the good. It increases the diversity of what we're thinking and arguing about, and that's not a bad thing.
Senate President Pro Tem Phil Baruth, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Michaela, and thank Vermont Public.
Well, next in the hot seat, we have Senator Pat Brennan, a Republican from Colchester, representing the Grand Isle District. Senator Brennan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Michaela.
Now, Senator Phil Baruth just brought up your predecessor, the person you were taking this seat over from, Senator Dick Mazza, who served for many, many years, passed away last year. What are you carrying with you from Senator Mazza's legacy as you step into this role?
Well, first of all, they're very big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Senator Mazza and myself had a great working relationship. We both operated grocery stores in Colchester for years. He was a very good helping hand with me when I started my business. We both chaired House Transportation and Senate Transportation together. And we'd meet in his back room at the store many times and converse about the state of the state. And so I'm looking forward to working with the folks in Grand Isle and Colchester. I think it's a daunting task. Like I said, very big shoes to fill, but I'm looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. And Senator Mazza was just an icon in this building and in the islands and Colchester. He's well known. He did a lot for the area. And just looking forward to getting started.
Yeah. Well, you're no newbie to these halls. You have served as a representative for many years now. I'm curious if you've spoken to other legislators who have made this shift from the House to the Senate about what to expect or how you're approaching that shift.
Well, over the years, I've spoken to a few, and what's it like when you move from the House to the Senate on both sides of the aisle? Senator Starr, I used to pick his brain all the time when he left our chamber to go to the Senate, and you know, it's different. The decorum's different. The chamber is smaller. You have 30 voices. The committee rooms are the committee themselves are smaller. 5 members on most committees, and so what I hear from them is you get a lot done. There are fewer voices in a committee when you're hashing out some, at times, tough topics. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that, and that's my takeaway from most of the senators I've talked to who have made that transition. They've impressed upon me the decorum piece and the fact that smaller committees get a lot more work done.
Mm. Well, Democrats maintain a majority in both chambers this session, but they no longer hold a veto-proof supermajority. I'm sure we'll be returning to this fact time and again this hour and throughout this legislative session. I'm curious what opportunities you see for yourself and your party to push forward policies and maybe changes to the way things the Democratic supermajority approached their work here.
Yeah, I think, well, the pressure's on all of us, no matter what party you're from. But I think given the fact that the supermajority is no longer, both sides will have to come to the table. Reasonable legislation will be proposed. And if it isn't, it won't happen. So I see us sitting
there. Sounds easy enough, way you put it.
It sounds simple, doesn't it? I hope that's
first day optimism.
Yeah, it sure is. But I think that you'll see that. I think we might not all agree on everything, but I think the fact that we'll have to listen to each other and compromise is key. Mm. And I don't think that was present you know, in Senate discussions, in Senate committees in the past with a supermajority. I don't, like Senator Bruce said, I it's not a real good thing for the state of Vermont and for our constituents.
Mm. You were sitting next to Senator Bruce as we spoke. He discussed education funding in depth as well as affordability issues. What were your thoughts hearing him speak?
Well, I can't say. See, we're on different teams here, but I can't disagree with anything he said. The public is watching us. Our constituents are watching. They expect something to happen this year. And you might see a little bit of relief this year, but it's not going to happen overnight, as Senator Bruce said. It's going to take some time. Our goal this year is to keep any property taxes, I know in my caucus, at a zero level. We're looking at a 5% increase of what we heard from the administration, but we're looking to bring it down to zero. We'll see what the governor proposes in his budget. But I think the all eyes are on us, so we're not going to walk out of this session with nothing happening.
Mm. Now, on your campaign website, you said that the water quality of Lake Champlain is of great importance to you. I wanted to bring this up because it's probably not going to be something we talk about with other legislators
right today.
Water quality, the environment, of course, we'll be speaking about climate change, but you know, runoff into Mallett's Bay and other parts of the lake that are in your district has long been an important issue for constituents there. What exactly do you plan to do to advocate for clean water and lake health in this session?
Well, I'm looking, as you said, I live in Mallett's Bay. I represented Mallett's Bay for 22 years, 27 miles of lakefront in my previous represented area. Mm-hmm. Now we have the islands. I can't even tell you what that is. I don't have a tally on that yet. But yeah, everything I represent has water all around it. So We've long been cognizant of keeping Vermont or improving the quality, water quality in Vermont. So I'm open to anything that comes out of natural resources, Senate Natural Resources, House Natural Resources. Money's well spent. I'll keep an eye on that and how we're spending it and what we're getting for results. Mm. But so yeah, I'm all over that. I don't believe I'll be on one of those committees, but I'll be watching every bill that comes out that has to do with water quality.
Mm. And as we spoke about with State Senate President Pro Tem Phil Baruth, who is on the committee that determines these committee assignments, there is going to be, as he said, more Republican representation on those committees because your party has won more seats. I'm curious what it feels like from your seat in this day before the assignments are rolled out. Is there any more, I don't know, lobbying or jockeying to do, or is everything kind of up to that three-person committee to figure things out from here on out?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much up to the three-person committee. We've all had an opportunity to put in our plug for committees, morning committees. We had three choices we handed in, and, you know, it's three in the afternoon. Being in the building for as long as I have, I think that every person on that three-person committee knows me, knows my experience in different committees. So, you know, hopefully that bodes well for my top two choices definitely. In the morning, I've put 14 years in transportation in the House, chaired the committee for 9 years. So that's a passion of mine. And I see that transportation infrastructure maybe slipping a bit in the last few years as far as...
In what sense, yeah. In what sense have you seen it slipping?
Well, just condition of roads. You know, the things that people see every day. We, when I started and took over, former chair Richie Westman in the House had championed... we called it a dog and pony show. We were crawling under bridges. We were checking every road out, and we were in pretty tough shape. He started the mission. I continued it, and Senator Mazza picked it up in the Senate. We all worked together to bring Vermont back to a respectable place, but I see it slipping a little bit. The dollars that we put into paving every year are diminishing a little, and whenever you do that, you lose ground. So I'm looking, should I be appointed to that committee, I'm looking forward to working on those issues.
Hmm. And Senator, I saw you earlier this morning showing your grandkids around.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of being here on this first day of the session is seeing lawmakers here with their families. What did they think?
Well, they were a little in awe. They sat in on the swearing in ceremony, and that can carry on for a little bit, so they get a little bored toward the end. But they hung in there pretty well. They love the building. One had been here already, my oldest granddaughter. She's 11. She had been here with her class and seen the place and sat in my seat in the house. But the other two is their first timers, and my daughter, for that matter, I think, has only been here once. So they enjoyed their. We took them on a little mini tour, and.
I saw it. We're sitting next to a absolutely enormous painting of the Civil War, and I saw you doing your grandfatherly duty of explaining to them Vermont's role in this battle.
Yeah, and kids being kids, I said, this is a Civil War depiction, and my granddaughter said, who won? And I said, well, you know, it's interesting.
There.
Yeah, we'll get there someday. A little bit of history.
Senator Pat Brennan, a Republican from Colchester, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're quite welcome. My pleasure.
We are speaking with lawmakers about their priorities this hour. If you have questions for State House leaders or something you really want them to know about your community or concerns about Vermont life, you can email us this hour at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org, and we will try to answer your question. Joining us next is State Senator Ginny Lyons of Williston. She's a Democrat representing the Chittenden District. Senator Lyons, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What's your day been like so far?
Well, it's been terrific. We were sworn in the Senate chamber, so we're all now officially senators.
Congrats.
And then I was very honored to be chosen as third member of the Committee on Committees, so that was very exciting for me as well.
Yes, we've spoken a bit about that already. This hour with Senator Phil Baruth, and committee assignments are coming out tomorrow.
Yes, yeah, we look forward to having those. If we can, we'll have them out tomorrow afternoon, probably after the governor has given his address.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the previous legislative session, you were chair of the Senate Committee on Health and Welfare. There was this landmark report that came out this fall that proposed some major changes to the configuration of Vermont's hospitals to avoid essentially financial collapse for many of them. Now, hospital regulation is in the hands of the independent Green Mountain Care Board, not the legislature or Governor Scott, but lawmakers such as yourself can weigh in on the Green Mountain Care Board's actions and decisions in some ways. Can you help us parse this out? What can lawmakers do in this area to support Vermont's hospitals?
Oh, thank you for the question. Obviously, the Act 167, which is driving some of the new hospital transformation work, as well as the report that came out, is a pretty comprehensive bill that will help us lower costs, maintain access, and hopefully keep quality where it should be. So Act 167 does ask for the Green Mountain Care Board and the Agency of Human Services to work collaboratively because they each have separate regulatory responsibilities. I thought folks don't usually understand that. The board has its own set of responsibilities in terms of setting rates and overseeing hospital budgets. At the same time, if we look at the Agency of Human Services, there's significant work that the agency does in overseeing Medicare, our relationship with the federal government and Medicare, Medicaid, and then our private health insurance, our ACA insurance programs. So there needs to be some relationship between the board and the agency to collaborate and ensure that rates are being set appropriately on both sides of the fence. The other thing that's really critical about not just hospital transformation that is going on right now, but also the integration of community services with hospital care. So we think about someone who has in acute care in a hospital and then needs to go home or go to a facility temporarily, whether it's for physical therapy or whatever. We're working toward a system that is fully integrated and will help people move smoothly through from one place to the next. The report that you're referenced that mm-hmm. came out, the Oliver Wyman report, is that. It's a report. It's a set of recommendations. But it is not anything that is written in stone. Mm-hmm. What we will do as legislators and what we have done is to look at those recommendations and then work with hospitals, with regulators, with providers, with payers, to see what can we do to help lower the burden of healthcare costs that Vermonters face right now. It is significant, and as you look at what we face, it's both an acute, it's an acute need right now to lower costs, but it's also longer term. And longer term and putting a system in place that we won't see this escalation or increase in costs over time.
Now, if you're hearing a little bit more noise in the background, that's because the House just got out of session. We're in the Cedar Creek Room here at the Montpelier State House on this first day of the legislative session. Our guest right now is Senator Ginny Lyons of Williston. So we're talking health care here. There's some tie-ins with the concerns over education costs and spending and their connections to property taxes, too. Average premium prices for the individual marketplace plans in Vermont are among the highest in the country. And these rising costs of health care were one of the major reasons that school budgets rose last year, and we all know how that went. Is there anything the legislature can do specifically to support school districts in terms of their health care costs as they try to keep their budgets in check?
You're asking such a terrific question, and we have worked on to answer that question now for a couple of sessions. The one thing that we could do and that we've tried to do is to separate out health care from local negotiations. So the bigger the risk pool we can put in place, the more people we can put into one combined coverage, insurance coverage, there's a way of lowering costs. It's not a magic. We don't have a silver bullet. There is no silver bullet for this. I will say this. One of my goals during the session is to provide some significant oversight to the work that we have done and the work that's going on right now by the board and by the Agency of Human Services and looking at what's happening with school budgets relative to health care. All of those things we need to look at. At the same time, we also need to evaluate how we actually pay for health care, because in there we see a real gradation of what we can do, and so there are payments for health care that benefit insurance companies more than providers, affect providers more than insurance companies. But overall, we want to hit the sweet spot with our payment reform so that people who are paying for premiums are seeing not this horrible increase that they've seen. They can't afford it. The people can't afford health care. And it has been very much evident with our school budgets. You've said it very well, and you've asked a great question, and it is something that we will continue to work on.
Well, we'll wrap up with that compliment to me. Why don't we? Democratic State Senator Ginny Lyons of Chittenden County, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well thank you, Michaela. It's great to be here. And remember, there's so much more to what we're doing. We're looking at housing issues. People who are without homes, we're looking at prevention, public health, substance use disorder, recovery programs. We have a lot on our plate during the session. We want to make whatever progress we can and work as effectively as we can. So thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you to you and the rest of the legislators for your important work here in Montpelier. Our next guest today is Representative Patty McCoy. She's a Republican from Pulteney, representing parts of Rutland County, as well as the House Minority Leader. Representative, welcome.
Thank you.
How has your day been so far?
Well, we just got out of session a little bit later, so we elected our speaker. So we are ready to actually start working on policy now.
Yeah, let's talk about that leadership vote that already happened this morning in the House. The incumbent Speaker, Democrat Jill Krawinski, was reelected after being challenged by independent Lauren Sebelia. How did you and your fellow Republicans vote? Was it as a block?
No, we had a few meetings on this, and a few went, one way, a few went the other, so we did not take a caucus position on it. We did not speak on the floor in favor or against either one of the candidate, speaker candidates. We had a member of our party second the nomination for the incumbent speaker, and we had a member of our party second the nomination for Laura Sebelia. So we kind of stayed out of the fray and just listened and learned.
Who'd you vote for?
I'm not going to say. It's a secret ballot. So
I had to ask.
That's why we have a secret ballot.
I had to ask.
Yes.
What do you see as the number one issue to address this legislative session?
The education problem and the incredible cost it's costing Vermonters. I mean, it's unacceptable, a 13.8% increase last year. I think they said 6% this year. It started at 8, might be at 6 now. So Vermonters just can't afford that going forward. They just can't.
What will be your specific approach? How will you, in your role as House Minority Leader, affect change?
So we're looking towards policy. We're going to be working with the governor's office, with the Democratic Party. Obviously, they still have the majority. People think we came in with 56 new representatives, which is wonderful for Republicans. But, the majority is still Democratic. So the Speaker has pledged, the Speaker Krawinski has pledged, she will work with me and she will work with the governor to try to reach consensus on an education funding package.
Well, to what degree do you feel emboldened by the results of the November elections? I mean, yes, Democrats still maintain a majority in the House, but there was a significant power shift.
Yes, there was. And I think the main one of the main things is the governor has his veto pen back. And that is a big thing to have that, because everything we didn't have a path forward without that. So anything
and just to spell
we did
that out for listeners, that means that the Democrats can no longer automatically override
correct.
The governor's veto.
We have enough to sustain a governor's veto now, mm-hmm. both in the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. So that is really a large thing, because now we have to work in committees together, bipartisan, tripartisan effects, to actually come to consensus in committees. Because if we don't, the governor's going to veto the bill. So I think it's great for Vermonters that we're actually going to be listening to every voice that sits in those 150 seats.
Well, one of the issues that came up in many parts of the state during the election season last year was the high cost of fuel specifically, and concerns about the Affordable Heat Act and the Clean Heat Standard. You've been an outspoken critic of the Clean Heat Standard. It's going to be coming back onto the legislature's docket this session. What do you hope changes about it?
I actually would hope that they'd actually scrap the whole thing and start again, because and not come back. This was a carbon tax, plain and simple, a carbon tax. So I'm hoping that they scrap it and we come back with a plan that is affordable for every Vermonter in the state. We live in the Northeast. Electric is not going to cut it all the time. You're still going to have to fall back on gas and fuel when it gets really cold. So to punish people who have to do that, I just don't understand why that bill was ever passed. I mean, $1.79 to $4 a gallon, that's what the PUC, Public Utilities Commission, came back with. I mean, you're already paying $4 a gallon for gas. For fuel oil.
One of the reasons it passed was to help Vermont meet its emission reduction goals, which were codified in the Global Warming Solutions Act. So if the Clean Heat Standard is dismantled, do you and perhaps other fellow Republican legislators have other strategies for helping Vermont reduce its emissions in the face of both that law and just global warming at large?
Right. Well, global warming, so we emit 0.1% of the entire carbon emitted in these United States. 0.1%. We are actually 51st in the nation, only have 50 states, which means Puerto Rico emits more carbon than we do. So we are a blip on the screen. And I am not a climate, you know, I denier or anything like that. But we need to pass laws that Vermonters can afford and ease some of the restrictions that we put in the Global Warming Solutions Act. If you recall when it was passed, and I think it was 2015 originally, they were goals. These were goals. And then in 2019, all of a sudden, they were mandated. And we needed to meet these. The first mandated goals are 2025. But within that time frame between 19 and 2025, we had the COVID crisis. Nobody did anything for 2 years. So, you know, that has lengthened the timeline in which we're going to reach goals. For instance, in transportation, for the 2030 goal, we already know we're not going to meet it. However, we can meet it by 2032. And then we have 18 years to get to the next step. So are we going to punish Vermont because we're 2 years longer reaching that 2030 goal? It makes no sense to me. So ease those restrictions going forward.
Republican Representative Patty McCoy, the House Minority Leader, thank you so much
for
joining us.
You are quite welcome. Have a great day.
Yes, appreciate your time. We are joined now in the Cedar Creek Room of the State House by Representative Kate Logan. She's a progressive Democrat from Burlington representing the Chittenden 16 District. She's also tapped to be the Progressive Caucus Leader this session. Representative Logan, welcome.
Thank you.
How's your day going so far?
It's something we've all been waiting for couple of months now. Our organization day, we were all looking forward to knowing the results of the speaker's election. A lot would have shifted this afternoon, depending on who had been elected, but just glad to be back. I'm really curious to see how this session goes. Looking forward to an opportunity to engage in some really robust deliberation. And I think we all have come to consensus already on the issues that are the priorities for Vermonters this year.
How did you and fellow progressives vote in that speaker, House Speaker vote? Was it as a block?
Oh, we did not vote on block, and I will not disclose the private votes of my colleagues.
It's a secret ballot. You're allowed. I'm curious to hear what the Progressive Party's priorities are this session. We've heard from Democrats and Republicans so far in this hour. What do you see as your party's priorities?
Well, our priorities have not changed considerably from year to year. Progressive priorities are progressive taxation, housing. We believe that housing is a human right. We need to address our affordable housing crisis and which includes a homelessness crisis right now. So we'll continue to work on those issues as we have in past sessions. Related to taxes, we want to ensure that we have a really good public education system that Vermonters can afford. And in those conversations, I'll be serving on a work group on the education policy side of things, but we want to ensure that our most marginalized students' needs are protected as we're working on our budget needs for the education system. And healthcare has been a priority for progressives for a very long time. You know, we are proponents of a universal healthcare system. Have been for a very long time, see the consequences right now in Vermont of a privatized for-profit healthcare system impacting Vermonters pretty heavily. So we'll be intervening as much as we can on healthcare. And public safety is a strong concern for our home communities. We're all from Burlington and Winooski. And we know that there's some work that we need to do on public safety to empower our public safety officials in our municipalities.
You brought up housing and homelessness earlier. I know that's an issue close to your heart outside of your work as a legislator. You also work in that sector.
I do.
We got an email from a listener named Brooke who says that focusing on reducing property taxes for Vermont's homeowners is dismissive of the financial hardships experienced by Vermont renters, people who are low income and people who are without homes. Not everyone in Vermont is a homeowner, they write. How does the legislature plan on supporting this population? I'd pose that question to you, Representative Logan.
I think that's a great question. These are the questions that we are going to be bringing to the legislature and making sure that tenants' rights are not left off the table right now. We know that increased property taxes also influence renters by raising taxes on the owner of the rental property as well. So we do think that managing property taxes for rental properties is really important. So there's a need to make a distinction in the non-homestead tax so that we can ensure that if there is a variation in property taxes on the non-homestead side, that renters are not adversely affected by those changes if those property taxes were to increase. So we're also going to continue the conversation, as we have for a number of sessions now, on practical policies like just cause eviction, which has been passed as a charter in both Burlington and Winooski and other municipalities, and was brought into a study over the summer. So we'll be, as a legislature, looking at the results of that tenant-landlord law study, and progressives will be laser-focused on making sure that that conversation is being had in the right committees.
Now, looking a bit more nationally here, following the presidential election, the Progressive Party here in Vermont called for a special session to come up with legislation that could preempt some policies that President-elect Donald Trump has vowed to enact. The governor did not go forward with this idea, but I am curious to hear a bit more from you about the policies, the specific policies that your party was anticipating from Trump that you're hoping to mitigate here in Vermont.
Yeah, we'd like to make sure that workers in our state are safe, especially undocumented workers are safe in our state. We want to be sure that LGBTQIA plus Vermonters are safe, that discrimination does not become a public norm in the nation, and particularly in the state of Vermont. We'll continue to defend women's productive health. The climate is going to continue to be under attack by the Trump administration. Essentially, any promise that he's made, any particular group of people that may be singled out, we will be guarding against the human rights violations that we may see coming down from the Trump administration and ensuring that Vermont remains a safe place.
And Representative, you mentioned a couple different issues there, from Trump's promise to deport millions of undocumented immigrants to challenges to reproductive rights nationwide. Vermont Public has reported on many of these issues. Listeners, if you'd like to learn more, you can find that reporting at vermontpublic.org. Progressive Party Caucus Leader, Representative Kate Logan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
There has been a high amount of turnover in the legislature over the past few years, and many young lawmakers have joined the ranks of Vermont's legislature. Take our next guest, Representative Lucy Boyden from Cambridge. Today, she begins her second term representing the Lamoille District. She is one of the youngest people serving in the legislature. Representative, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined right next door by Representative Alice Emmons. She is one of the longest-serving Vermont legislators and is known as the Dean of the House. She was elected to the House in 1983, born and raised in Springfield, and represents parts of Windsor County. Representative Emmons, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being here.
And I must say, I do love your brooch, your first day of the legislature brooch. It's lovely.
Herding cats.
Oh, and the cat's tails move back
and they
forth.
Move, yes.
Herding cats. I love that. Representative Emmons, how has the legislature changed over the years since you first started back in the early 80s?
You know, it has changed, but it hasn't changed. I think the biggest change has happened when the numbers have been so skewed in terms of party structure. And that has happened gradually over time. When I first came in here, it was pretty heavily Republican every place. Democrats were in the minority everywhere. And over the years, that has shifted. And I think this year there was a pendulum swing to say, hey, wait a minute, we've got to get back to being more in the middle. I think also over the years, you see a different makeup of the General Assembly. It goes through cycles. I have seen years where there's a lot of younger folks that have come in, or a lot more women have come in. And then the following few elections later, it kind of shifts back. And this year, I think we had a temperature check, if you want to put it that way. And we need young voices. We need experience. We need life experience of different varieties to really make the legislative branch work. You cannot have one perspective or two perspectives. You really need to reflect what is out there for Vermont, because we reflect all of our constituents. And it's not one or the other. It's a amalgamation of all those voices together. And that's the beauty of the Vermont legislature. You bring everyone to represent every part of the state. Everyone has a voice, and we find common ground. And that's the beauty of Vermont. That's what we're here for.
Well, Representative Emmons, you described history as something of a pendulum swinging back and forth. Representative Boyden, you are just entering your second term right now, so I haven't seen too many of those pendulum swings just yet. And this past election cycle was a significant one. There were some major changes that happened to the makeup of the legislature. I'm curious what your takeaways were, and how your approach to your job might have shifted from where you were this time 2 years ago.
Yeah, the makeup of the House is absolutely different, and even just the look and feel of it as well. 2 years ago when I came into the House chamber, saw a lot more women, a lot more people from different diverse backgrounds, some younger folks as well, and that has absolutely shifted. As Rep. Emmons mentioned, we need different diverse perspectives at the table, different life experience, so I welcome the balance that we're seeing this upcoming biennium. Vermonters spoke, and they want to see a more moderate agenda, more moderate issues talked about here at the State House, and I think we'll see more of that with the more moderate and more balanced makeup.
What did you learn during your first term that you would like to pass on to folks, to legislators who are starting now?
Yeah, I learned to find places that are calm, find places where you can really deeply think. I frequently reflect on all the diverse perspectives present in Cambridge and Waterville, and also in other locations of Lamoille County as well, especially when there's large decisions coming up, and how I can accurately reflect and vote on behalf of the constituents that have elected me. When it comes to collaborating on bills, I try to find different diverse perspectives, people from different committees, people of different ages, different backgrounds, to help create a bill that works for all Vermonters and that is aligned.
And Representative Emmons, what is your advice for new legislators?
Well, I was just thinking back when I was brand new. I was 27 years old. It was a little different dynamic in a way. It was really, for new folks in the building, it was very clear that it was your time to listen and to learn and not always be speaking up and sit back, learn the process, learn who is in what position, and build relationships with your colleagues, and you will learn how government operates. That's been the biggest change that I've seen is, over the years, the new folks who have come in want to be really, really vocal at the beginning. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it can be a hindrance to them because they don't know the history of House members that are there, or senators, or the governor's office. They don't have that base of history. So you need that base of history at times to really figure out how to go forward. So you have to sit back and really learn the process and learn the people and build relationships.
Have you noticed a change in how your male colleagues approach working with women lawmakers over the last 40 years since you've first started in the legislature?
I've noticed a change. I think there's more wanting to treat women more respectful and more equal and hear their voices. Though when I was first here, I never felt that men were looking down on me or not taking me seriously. But I could see that there were situations like that that were happening in the building. But now it just seems the caliber is more equal and more cohesive.
I'd love to hear from each of you what your main policy priority is this legislative session. There, we heard so many different concerns from constituents all across the state during the election cycle, from high property taxes to climate change to just overall affordability issues. Representative Boyden, what's the number one goal you have going into this session?
My number one goal going into this session is absolutely looking at affordability and government accountability. I helped move along a bill last year about government accountability and setting up a subcommittee of folks to look back on past bills that we have put into law and make sure that those bills are and regulations are meeting the goals that they set out to reach. I think we also need to be looking at our education, supporting public education, how it's funded, and how that relates to property taxes. Housing is also a large issue. I'm a renter myself, and it's extremely difficult to find a rental location within the area. And think about buying a house in the future as well.
And Representative Emmons?
The largest policy issue that's before all of us is the term affordability. The question is, how do you define it? I think what is coming up to the surface for a lot of Vermonters, justifiably so, has been the property tax. And that's cyclical. I've seen that every 10 years or so, the property tax is the focus. So we're back into that cycle. I think that we really need to look, in terms of our tax policy and initiatives that we put in, how that impacts the average Vermonter. I'm chair of a money committee, and I've always approached that to be fiscally responsible and really look at taxpayer dollars and where they're going. And I've encouraged that with my committee members, and I believe that we do that. You have to balance, and not everybody's going to get what they want one way or the other. If you want services, you need to pay for them. But the question is, how do you pay for it, and how many services are provided?
And Representative Emmons, have you seen your constituents' trust in local government shift over the years in which you've been in the legislature?
Local government has really shifted. I think part of it has been the issues are much more complex. I think it's harder for your local tax base to support what is needed locally. And things have become more centralized, either from the state or even in the region. And I think we're going to start seeing more of that. I think the school situation, property tax, and the distribution of our educational system with our schools and how many buildings and where they're located, that's really going to be some very, very difficult conversations in the community. And that's where a real shift may be happening over the next 5 years.
Representative Boyden, let's end with some youthful optimism here. What gives you the most hope about your work going into this session?
What gives me the most hope going into this session? I think it's all the great people that we get to work with, including our legislative staff. They do a lot of hard work, and they always provide great advice. And just finding little glimmers of joy. Every day throughout this building's magical. There's many wonderful portraits and rooms and places to just sit and think. So finding those little sparks of joy, I look forward to it from now until May. Mm.
Do you have the same fondness for this building, Representative
Evans? Oh, yes, I do. It's my home. It's my home away from home. The building, the State House, is very, very special. And Vermont should be really proud of its State House. It's the seat of state government, and we need to take care of it, both the building and our state government. And I feel very strongly about that.
Representative Alice Emmons and Representative Lucy Boyden, both Democrats, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have been broadcasting live today from the Cedar Creek Room here in the Montpelier State House under its golden dome. This is the first day of the new legislative session. Thank you to everybody for listening today. We are going to be talking to many more legislators over the next couple months. You can always email us with your questions for Vermont's lawmakers to VermontEdition@vermontpublic.org.